Subscribe to Team Time.
Welcome to Team Time Table Talks. I'm your host, Debbie Waith, and in this series, I'm going to be speaking with practitioners and experts about working with teams. I'll be discussing what working at the team level means from a practical perspective and how it's affected by increased uncertainty and remote working. My aim in this series is to optimise how we work, think and feel in teams to be more human, hopeful and helpful in our organisations. We'll hear my guests share their real-life experience and expertise in relation to working with teams and get past the soundbites to dig out the learnings and micro-tips that you can try with your teams today. We'll share stories from our practice to help bring our learnings to life, whilst of course respecting our clients' confidentiality. This series is all about work at the team level, and I've been working in this space for many years, but it's been a space that I have experienced as complex work and often to a degree hidden work. The conversations are at times sensitive and of course aren't open for all to see. And so my aim with this series is really to lift the lid a bit on what we mean by work at the team level, to share the experience of practitioners in this space, and really to help teams move to being more human, more hopeful, and more helpful. And that's about helping improve the impact of the functioning of the team, the dynamic of the team, the connection within the team, and of course, the performance of the team. I'm passionate about this work because I truly believe the team is where a lot of decisions sit and where culture comes to life. It's where behaviours are tolerated or not. And through focusing at this level, we get to an understanding of how your organisation actually works in practice. This series is for those that work with teams, whether as part of the team, as OD practitioners, HR, or leaders within the teams. Essentially, all those that are interested, intrigued, confused, or curious about what happens in the team and how can we make life in the team better. My hope is to inspire you to consider the health of your own team in terms of its functioning, the quality of connections, the dynamic of the team, and ultimately the performance. And to give you some ideas, some concepts, some practices for you to take away each time and try with your own teams. So through a series of conversations I'm going to be having with fellow practitioners, with HR directors, with experts in neuroscience, mindfulness, strategy work, working outdoors, even through to art and philosophy, I want to share with you some of the techniques, experience and learnings people have had working in this space. In this first episode, I'm going to go solo and I wanted to share with you some core concepts that really, for me, are the foundation of work at the team level. And I want to do that so that when we move into the guested episodes, we have a similar foundation for what we mean by work at the team level. We're thoughtful about the orientation we bring to work at the team level, and we've set up well because we've considered really a fundamental aspect of this work, which is the quality of our contracting. So let's get started. What is work at the team level? What does that mean? Well, for me, there is a distinction between a team and a group. And whilst this may seem theoretical, it does actually have an important consequence if you're trying to do work at the team level. For me, a team needs to have a shared or collective set of accountabilities. There has to be a level of interdependency between the people within that team for some degree of shared or collective outcome. Each needs to really have some skin in the game for whatever that collective target is. It's not enough just to report to the same person and then to call yourselves a team. That for us in this space would be a group. And of course, you know, there can be good work done in enhancing the connection within the group, but it's not the same as work with a team that have interdependent relationships with each other. What is work at the team level? For me, we need to split out what we mean by team and of course, teaming. Rarely nowadays are we part of a single team. Often we're part of multiple teams, whether that's the team that you sit on and report into, or your own team that you have people reporting into, or perhaps multiple project teams that you are also part of. For the purposes of this series, I want you to think of the team that you most associate as being your team. And then I want you to think about what we mean by team in three different ways. One is the sense of community and connection that we offer each other. The second is the sense of well-being we have as a team, as a collective, not just as individuals. And the third is what we are responsible for in terms of outputs, performance, targets. And it's those three areas that I think we're going to keep coming back to as an anchor through this series, in understanding when we talk about work at the team level, what area are we actually focused on and to what effect? There's much written about in relation to high performing teams. And I think it's worth me just setting as a foundation my point of view in relation to teams. My fundamental approach is from a dialogic perspective. And what that means in essence is that the power, the potential and the comparison, it all exists within that team. High performing team references are often out with a certain team and are about reference and comparison to others. From a dialogic perspective, we're looking at enabling and releasing the potential within that team of people in whatever way and for whatever measures or targets that are aimed for with that team. So taking a dialogic approach, we are interested in building ownership and engagement of the team performance from within the team. This isn't about somebody coming in and fixing the team or, you know, bringing some silver bullet that, you know, so long as you follow these prescribed steps, we'll all become a better team. It's about increasing the level of awareness, understanding, resonance within that team that allows that team to rise, to thrive. You know, in the last 12 to 15 months, we've been through such a tumultuous period, certainly here in the UK, but I can imagine in any country around the world as we've faced a global pandemic with COVID-19. And the pressure that has been put on organisations, teams and individuals to respond during such a period has been one marked by disparity. Depending on your sector and your industry, some have thrived, others have had to focus on survival. That, of course, has an impact for each of us within those organisations and also, you know, in our home lives, where we've had to really face our relationship with uncertainty, risk, control. And this plays out at the team level. And yet, as everything shifted to work more virtually, which persists as I record this, there is a question mark over what is work at the team level when we're in the virtual world, and what is good teamwork when we're working more remotely and more virtually. And so through this series, I hope to draw on the experience of many practitioners who are working in this space and virtually, so that we can each learn what can we contribute and what do we need to do in the spirit of community and connection, well-being and performance for the teams that we are in. I want to open up the conversation really around what do we mean by work at the team level, because I think there are lots of different types of work that can happen at the team level. And that's not always bringing in somebody from external to do work with your team, but it's what you also have within your grasp and control, whether as a member of a team or a leader of a team or an HR business partner supporting a team. And that really does vary, you know, quite considerably from sort of the rather large umbrella of team development and activities and dialogues, exercises, online and in person, as well as team coaching, as well as individual coaching and supportive team performance. So when I am in conversation with practitioners, I want to ask them, what does work at the team mean? So that we all have a better understanding of what are some of the options and opportunities for me in my work with this team. What I want to do in this first episode is really concentrate on getting started in the space of work at the team level. So in doing this, I want to make a leap and make an assumption. And you can play this in your mind, but make an assumption you're going to start some work with your team. And what is it that you need to do to set up well? We call this good contracting. What is it that we need to do to contract well for work at the team level? Whether you're an external facilitator, whether you're an internal facilitator, whether you're a member or a leader of that team, there's two questions that we ask ourselves as we start any of this work. And the first is, what is the work? What is it that this team hopes to achieve through doing this work? And the second question is, and why am I here? And why now? Now, for those of you that are in and members of that team, that question about why am I here, I really want you to put on the hat of what role are you going to play in relation to this team that serves the purpose of the first question, what is the work? In helping to define what is the work, I'll remind you of the three pillars that I mentioned earlier in relation to work with teams. The first is community and connection. So is this work about building greater community, greater levels of connection? The second is about well-being and potential of that team. And the third is about outcomes, outputs and deliverables. So just take a moment to think and reflect. Where is it, or what is it, do you think that this team most needs at this point? And it may be that it covers more than one of these areas, but just bringing some degree of clarity to the intention of this work, and as a consequence, the focus of attention of this work, is really helpful up front. Now, for those that are not members of a team, good contracting really talks to building the quality of relationship that you will need to enter and undertake this complex and sensitive work. And that starts as soon as you are in conversation. It certainly starts before you've got a capital C contract, because you're already in relationship with people in that organisation, most probably in relationship with some of the people in that team, whether that's the HR director or often the head of the team. So be cognizant that the work in regards to the relationship and starting to build the quality of relationship that you'll need for this work has already started. One of the most important aspects in contracting well, and I say contracting meaning the lowercase contracting, so really the informal arrangements and agreements that you will have for this work that are distinct from what will go into your, you know, capital contract that you may have with a client or an organization. And one of the most important will be in relation to the structure, the time, and the measures of success for this work. And these are underpinned by the orientation you bring to this work. So I've already said that my orientation is dialogic. So that means that my focus is within that team and helping to release the potential from within that team. I also take a systemic approach. So I'm interested in understanding how that team is in relation to other aspects in the wider organization, in the external world, and in relation to other teams that it either serves or possibly competes with or is served by. So there's always going to be an interest in understanding who those varying teams are, who the various stakeholders are that make up that bigger system. And for me, this wider systemic orientation is really important to understand to root the purpose of the work that you will be doing with this team. In my experience, there's often pressure early on, often from outside the team itself, for a clear frame or plan, outcome and measures for the work, because obviously there is a budget, and both time and spend need to be justified. So we can't deny the need for a level of understanding around what is this process and why should we invest our time and money in it. And I think one of the most important things you can do at this early stage is, whilst offering a light frame, clarify the nature of the work that happens at the team level. And by that, I mean work that can be somewhat unpredictable. We can start, for example, to work on the purpose, whether that's the purpose of the team or a wider organization, and unpack and uncover that actually we've got some team dynamics that need to be worked on or some priorities that need to be worked on before we can meaningfully get to work on the original focus of this work, which in that case was purpose. The work can be non-linear, messy even. And so there's something beneficial at the very early stages of helping raise the understanding of what is the nature of this work, and that whilst we'll have a frame and kind of signposts of what will happen when and with whom, there is a lightness of touch to that. That also, and often will come up early in a conversation, speaks to how do we know what is good work in this space and what will be the measures of success. And again, this really, you know, clearly roots back to what your orientation is in doing this work. You know, most fundamentally, what you believe is possible in relation to organizations and human beings. And so for me, what I've learned over time is that measures of success aren't so much the financial analytics and you know, your ROIs, IRRs, etc. They're actually really hard to separate correlation and causation. What I'm more interested when we go back to community and connection, well-being and potential, outcomes, outputs and deliverables, is to put measures against those aspects. And one that comes to mind is the quality of transitions of team members both joining and leaving the team. What was the quality of how someone was both integrated and how somebody, as they were leaving the team, both how they felt and how the team was left feeling? And I think we've probably all had experiences where those things haven't been done well, or there's been conversations that have been left where we don't know what is okay to say or not say. And it has an impact both at the community, the connection, the well-being and the potential level. So it's understanding the measures that are appropriate against the nature of the work. And that takes you back to those three pillars: community and connection, well-being and potential, outcomes, outputs, deliverables. The next aspect that is critical in setting up early on in our contracting phase is an understanding of the key roles in this process. Ownership of both the process and the outcomes, and the boundaries around this work. So let's start with the key roles in any team process. I'm someone that thinks in shapes and metaphors, and I'd like to invite you to think of a triangle with its three corners, and at one of the corners is the role of facilitator. Another is HR director, and the final one is team leader. And then within that triangle, you have the team members. For me, these are the critical roles in certainly many of the processes that work at the team level. The facilitator can be an internal or an external, but for much of this work, it isn't usually possible for a member of the team to also facilitate the team itself. But that would depend on the nature of the work being undertaken. So the three key roles are facilitator of the work, HRD, and they can be in the role of contracting for the work, or and commissioning the work, or maybe even also a member of the team for the work, and then the team leader, him or herself. And, you know, if you imagine the edges of that triangle, each of those relationships are critical. And so the facilitator having a relationship with the HRD, separate from having a relationship with the team leader, and then together having that relationship, each of those are important. And it's important because this work fundamentally involves trust. Trust in the process, trust in the choices, trust particularly when things get tricky. The strength of those relationships will be tested at those times. And so those relationships do need to be direct and strong. In terms of who's within that triangle, sometimes it can be easy to say, well, it's the team, it's the team members. And of course, that's true, but it's not always absolutely clear who is in a team and who isn't. And that can be because some people have double or more reporting lines, and maybe this isn't their primary team. It can be because perhaps people have project responsibilities across many, sometimes competing teams. It can be a question even as to whether support staff are part of the team or not. All of that needs to be clarified before the work starts. So who is in the team, who will be part of this work? Because once those lines have been set, the nature of the conversations do often get quite sensitive, confidential. You need to be really clear who are in those conversations and who are not. And I know this sounds as though it should be really obvious, but actually I've been in a few situations where people have regarded themselves as part of the team and should be included in the work, and the core of the team haven't. And only did it become clear farther into the work that some people felt excluded from the work. And that has an impact on the community, the connections, and how work actually gets done. So being clear early on and having those conversations early on and agreeing with people early on is really important to set up well. If we think back to the three roles that I mentioned around the triangle, the facilitator, the HRD, and the leader of the team. In this first episode, I want to touch on the role of the facilitator. And I think there's three main roles that the facilitator holds, whether internal or external to the team. The first is in offering a process or frame for the work. The second is in creating the container for the work. And the third is to use our ability to notice patterns of this particular team and to bring awareness to both the patterns and impact of those patterns with that team. So going through these in a little more detail, the first, the offering of the frame, perhaps techniques and exercises, in essence, the process by which the work will unfold. So just going back to the team that you have in mind and the work that you have in mind, what's your starting point for a frame for the process? Things to consider will be, who are the team? What's the intention of the work for this team? What's your role? And what might be some appropriate and useful techniques or exercises? Whether they be at the full group, working in pairs, working individually. As you consider process choices, it's also worth considering the levels of comfort, risk or challenge that currently exist within the team. And if these are areas that need to be built on, then obviously it would be wise not to make leaps to high risk, high challenging exercises or techniques if the levels of trust, for example, are low within a team. So it's being conscious, where is the team starting from in relation to the nature of the work? And that will shape and guide you as to the types of exercises, techniques, dialogues that you will plan to have over a period. And of course, one of the fundamentals of this work is to allow for that to unfold as the work continues. You'll hold a light frame of the type of interventions that you may make, and they will be shaped based on what actually happens. The second role is in establishing a container for this work. And by a container, we mean a psychological space that feels safe enough for people to bring themselves, to show themselves, to be vulnerable and to be challenged and to challenge others within that team, without fear of repercussions. Now, it's not in our gift as a facilitator to bring a container, if you like. It's something that is created and produced by the team itself, and in particular by the role of the team leader, who, again, whilst not able to create that container him or herself, they do have an exponential effect on the container in terms of whether it will feel safe enough. And that can be through whether they hear, really hear, when somebody says something that they haven't heard before or perhaps that they may disagree with, and whether they react and respond with curiosity or with condemnation. Our role as facilitators are to enable the container through both setting the standard by which we expect this work to be undertaken, and that is by bringing candor and openness and vulnerability, and also calling out when there is clearly a dynamic or something that's getting in the way of the work. And obviously we have to do that with care, but failure to do that often creates something much bigger, and it has an impact on whether it feels safe enough to bring more difference or disagreement into that group. And just to give this some grounding, if we're working with a team on, for example, values or priorities, if there are low levels of trust between the group members, it is really hard to gain alignment on priorities, which often means compromise and supporting others if people don't fully trust each other. And so actually we've got to work with building those levels of trust before we can get to the priorities. And that means building the container that we can face into the dynamics that are happening within the group rather than avoid and ignore them. The third role that I wanted to mention that is part of what a facilitator can bring is the ability to notice patterns that play out within that team. And of course, every team has patterns within the relationships in how they engage, how they speak to each other, how they listen to one another, how decisions are made. It's inevitable. There will be patterns that evolve over time. What is usually less obvious to those in the team are both what those patterns are and the impact that those patterns can have. And what somebody coming in to work with your team can bring is the ability, firstly, to notice what some of those patterns are, and secondly, to bring your awareness as a team to the impact that those patterns have. When we're talking about noticing the dynamics and the patterns of the team, it's important to take this back to the triangle I mentioned around the focus for teamwork. So community and connection, what patterns do we notice in relation to those elements? Well-being and potential, what patterns do we notice in relation to those? And outputs and outcomes, what patterns and dynamics do we notice in relation to those? So we'll be paying attention to each of these in our work. And for me, one of the measures of success of work with a team is that these three roles, so the offering of a process, the enabling of a container, and the noticing and awareness of patterns within a team, are all aspects that in successful work with teams will transfer across to become a capability and capacity within the team itself. So those are the three roles that I wanted to mention at this stage in relation to the role of the facilitator. What this work is not is a substitute for performance management. And, you know, this is one that we often have to learn through hard experience. This isn't about using the team to manage the individual performance of a particular team member. And so I would always caution and watch for those flags if much of the inquiry work or early conversations are focusing around one team member. What's that about? And what, going back to what is the intention of this work? That is an issue that needs to be dealt with through the line and not as part of any team process. So those are the three roles. And then in terms of ownership, again, it's been a learning of mine that, you know, whilst we're coming in and offering the frame and an outline of the process and obviously tools and techniques, what we Arnott is an owner of the process. Certainly from my orientation, one of the most important aspects in our work with teams is that the team members themselves are the owners and responsible for the process and the outcomes. Now, does that mean that they need to come up with all of the ideas? No, but it means that they are the ones choosing where to put their time and attention based on their experience of this team and what they hope for through this work with this team. And so there's some real clarity in those early stages and certainly in the conversations in trying to uncover what is the work, often through an inquiry process, in building that sense of engagement and ownership and responsibility across the team. It's not the job of the team leader, it's not the job of the facilitator, it's not the job of HR alone, it's the collective effort of that team. Finally, I wanted just to reflect for a moment on boundaries. And boundaries, I mean, in relation to this, the container, to the roles, and to the ownership, because there are often opportunities for the boundaries to be permeable or confused. And, you know, to give an example, there have been times where I have seen colleagues or have experienced myself where there has been a need for either the team leader, if it's early in a process, or the collective team, if it's later in a process, to hold one team member to account in relation to commitments that have been made or behaviours, standards that have been set that haven't been met. And I've often seen this attempted to be put over to the facilitator. And of course, the challenge with that is when the facilitator is no longer working with that team, then those standards, those values, those boundaries leave as they leave. And so it's really important in when undertaking this work that the boundaries are clear throughout the work and that they're there to serve building the capability and capacity of that team for a greater level of community and connection that will sustain them through even the most challenging of conversations. The final point that I wanted to reflect on in relation to good contracting is to not be afraid to be clear up front what this work takes. I think it does a service both to the team themselves and to you in the role of facilitator that we all know what we're getting ourselves into here. And what I mean by that is there are levels of commitment that are required in work at the team level. And that talks to attendance, that talks to focus and attention, that talks to the continued work between any scheduled sessions. It requires honesty, openness, curiosity, non-judgmental, care and compassion for one another. It means leaving blame at the door and having an orientation toward learning rather than an attitude toward blame or failure. Really critical one is confidentiality. You know, we have to be free to speak and to know that it doesn't go beyond this team. I've talked already about the clarity of responsibility and ownership, the process and outcomes being within the team. And all of these aspects together contribute to this wider sense of psychological safety, which is a foundational requirement for work at the team level. Many of you will be familiar with Amy Edmondson's work around psychological safety in her fabulous book, The Fearless Organization. If you haven't read it yet, I would highly recommend it for understanding the role of psychological safety in our organisations and as an underpinning for learning, innovation and growth. But what we know psychological safety as opposed to trust, which is what happens between one individual and another individual, psychological safety actually emerges as a property of a group. So within that team, it's about the quality of climate. Does it feel safe enough to take a risk? Will I be valued for my difference? Will I be rejected or mocked for my difference? To learn and collaborate well, we need to feel safe enough to take risks, to offer new and different ideas, thinking, feelings. We have to be willing to engage in productive conflict. This isn't soft stuff. This is incredibly hard, sensitive work. And what I've described before in terms of contracting, so structure, measures of success, roles, ownership, and boundaries are all inherently tied up with how we create an environment that feels psychologically safe enough for those team members to contribute in their fullest. And it is only momentary. It's not something that we create and great, we're done. It can be snatched away with a look, with a tone. I've seen it play out in team situations where somebody may be offering a new idea or a different opinion or disconfirming something that had seemed so important to the team. And the look of the team leader shuts down that person, and instantly you can nearly feel everybody get a little smaller, a little less likely to offer a new bit of difference. And the difference often can be the thing that will make the step change as to what's possible within that team. So I'm going to pause there on what is good contracting. And I'm sure there are other aspects that I will come to think, oh, I should have said that, I should have mentioned this. And what I'm going to say is, through the course of the series, I will continue to consider, are there any other aspects around setting up well and contracting to add? So I hope that you'll come and listen to the various guest episodes. I have a fabulous set of guests lined up for this series that I think we're all going to learn such a lot from. They're well-experienced practitioners that bring, you know, deep learning and stories with them that I hope will help us all in our practice. So each of those episodes will start to air each Tuesday on LinkedIn, and then I'm also going to be offering shorter team bites, which will be 15 to 20 minutes long and will be excerpts from those longer conversations about a single topic. So I hope you'll be able to join us for the full episodes of Team Time Table Talks, and hopefully some of the team bites too. The episodes will be conversational. I want you to feel as though you're joining us at the table. They're called Table Talks because these, for me, are conversations that I've had with people over the years, you know, with a cup of coffee around the table, just as we share our practice with each other. And the intention is for all of us to learn a little more about what work is in this space from a practical point of view, perhaps offering some points of reflection and covering a wide range of perspectives that will hopefully help you consider what work you want to do with your teams as we progress through this series. As part of each of the episodes in this series, I have been asking each of my guests to share a micro practice that you can use with your teams. And in that spirit, I want to do the same. I want to ask you as you consider work that you would like to do with the team you have in mind, I want to ask you to write down and consider four questions. What is your intention with this work? What is your role in this work? What are your assumptions about what the work is and about the team itself? And what will be your first steps in setting up well, contracting well, for work with the team you have in mind? I think these four questions help us to position ourselves in relation to work at the team level, and I hope they'll be helpful to you as you consider what work you might be interested in doing, whether in relation to community and connection, well-being and potential, or outcomes, outputs, and deliverables of your team. At the end of each episode, I've also invited my guests to respond to two questions. And in the spirit of fairness, I want to respond to those two questions too. So the first of the questions are, what are you hopeful for as you look ahead? And for me, what I'm hopeful for is that we can step in to our teams, our organisations, and cultivate and nourish ways of working that actually sustain us and that contribute to a greater level of humanity in our teams and in our organisations. And I see seeds of that happening, you know, as a consequence of such high levels of change in our organisations and across society. So I am genuinely hopeful for that. The second question is, how can we be more helpful in our teams? And for me, I think there's something about recognising the distinction between what we do in our teams and how we are in our teams. And so much focus and attention gets put on what we do. And I think particularly with the shift to virtual working, it's really highlighted that we also need to have a sense of well-being and meaning and value through our work and in our teams. And so I think a greater focus on, you know, the process of how we are and how we work together, as well as what we do, I think would be of great help in many teams. And then the final thing that I ask guests is to share if they have a quote, a poem, a book that they find particularly inspiring. And I have to confess, for me, there are a lot. You could ask me each day of the week and I would have a new one for you. But in relation to this work, I particularly like Brené Brown's words as she describes having a strong back, a soft front, and a wild heart. And I think for me, when we're in this kind of work with teams, that each of those three elements, both separately and together, are really critical. So that, for today, for now, is what I would say resonates for me. So there we are. This is the end of the first episode of this new series focused at teams, in the new series of Team Time Table Talks. I would be delighted if you joined us for the episodes. And as I say, they're going to be airing through this spring and summer months. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to share your thoughts on this episode or ask me any questions, please get in touch on debbiewaith.com or LinkedIn. I'll be releasing a new Team Time Table Talks every Tuesday. We'd love for these to be accessed by all those who you think would be interested by sharing on your favourite platform. And remember to subscribe to not miss the latest episode. I'll upload any references made in the episode on debbiewaith.com under podcast. Thanks for listening, and I wish you a hopeful and helpful week ahead. Goodbye.
Subscribe to Team Time.